Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Do you consider yourself to be a steward of the land? Of what land, then? And who is in your cohort of conservation? Scott Freeman is a biology professor at the University of Washington, where he received a Distinguished Teaching Award. He's recognized as a world authority on undergraduate biology education. His new book is not a textbook, however. It's a look at the realities of rehabilitating a degraded fish run in what was once an old-growth watershed. It's also a look at how humans use resources over time and what our history means for our future. The book is called Saving Tarboo Creek. Scott Freeman joins us now from Seattle, Washington on the phone. Scott Freeman, welcome to In the Moment.
Great to be here. Thanks, Lauren.
Let's start with how this book came about, because it's very intentional in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of backstory here with this book came about. But let's start at the beginning a little bit.
The very beginning, I would have to go back to 1935.
Right.
Actually, and that's when a man named Aldo Leopold bought some abandoned farmland, a Dust Bowl farm in central Wisconsin, and he and his family over the next 12 years set to work to bring back the native prairie plants and plant pine trees and bring the area back to life. And that was probably the first ecological, what we now call an ecological restoration program, that had ever been done in history.
Was there an awareness that that was the first time it had been done? Or was it just, he just did it because that's what he wanted to do?
No, he was certainly aware of what he was doing, mm-hmm. and more importantly, why. He wrote a book to try to tell the world about that, called the Sand County Almanac, that's now considered kind of the Bible of the conservation movement internationally. And my wife is his granddaughter, so that's why I went back to 1935 to answer your question about where this all started. So we met actually at that family property in Wisconsin in 1980, and when we got together, and we always dreamed of starting a project like this of our own, and that turned out to be Tarboo Creek.
What was so revolutionary about Sand County Almanac that made it one of those classics that people still refer to? What were the thoughts that he had and the philosophy that he put forth?
It was a very simple idea, but it's resonated. That book has sold over 2 million copies, and I think it's been translated into 13, 14 languages, something like that. It's right. Read all over the world. But the simple idea that he was trying to tell the world was what he called the land ethic. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of great ideas, it was very simple. And he just said, as human beings, or since we first got organized as a species, we started out just caring about ourselves and our immediate family. And then as civilization and organization changed and our ethics and morality grew and became more sophisticated, we started caring about our community and then later our nation or our cultural group. And then next, our community of nations, and now what we call the family of man. And what Leopold said is that he sort of saw this progression of ethics, and he said, now what we need to do as a people, as a species, is to extend that ethical behavior about what we really care about to the land, to make a connection with the land and the environment. And then he really saw that's what really completes us.
Hmm. You have said that you, in writing Saving Tarboo Creek, you had a slight sense of desperation, as you wrote, as well, a sense of urgency. Tell me why.
Well, that actually grew out of my teaching. You mentioned I teach at the University of Washington, and I teach introductory biology to, you know, ginormous lecture halls. And one of the courses I teach focuses on, at the end of the course, actually, we go through data on sort of what the world looks like right now in terms of climate change and projections for what temperatures and ocean acidification is going to look like over the next 100 years. So we're talking about, you know, my students' grandchildren or great-grandchildren. This isn't a very distant future. And then we look at data on deforestation and the mass extinction is going on now and projections for human population growth doubling over that time period. And it hits students like a ton of bricks. It's like, oh my gosh, they're just moving into the world, trying to figure out who they are and their place in it, it's sort of like, my goodness, what a mess. We've got work to do here. So that's really where that sense of desperation comes from, is that, But on the other hand, I wanted to tell people this really positive story of the kind of reward and purpose and meaning you can gain by doing a project like our little project, wherever you are, and doing it with a group of people that you really care about and who share your concern for leaving a legacy.
Tell me about Tarboo Creek.
Well, it's a little salmon stream. It's only about 7.5 miles long, so it flows down into the Pacific Ocean, and these fish, I don't know if your listeners go, but salmon lay their eggs in fresh water, and then they die. And then the babies will come out of their nests after a few months of hatching out of the egg, and they'll stay in these creeks usually for about a year. And then they float down to the Pacific Ocean, and just the size of your pinky at that point, if that. Hmm. And then they come back 2 or 3 years later, and they're 8 or 10 or 12 pounds. It's almost magical, and they return to the site where they breed. So there were salmon in Tarboo Creek historically. One of the species has been extinct and hasn't come back yet. The runs were badly depressed. And the section that we bought in 2004 was the worst section of all in the creek. It had been ditched. So this area, this watershed, was cleared for agriculture back in the 1880s, 1890s. But the soils are very poor, and so the farms had failed, all of them. I think the last one went bankrupt in the 1960s. So the land was just abandoned, essentially, but the ditches were still there. So that's where we started, with this ditch creek that was overgrown with blackberry and reed canary grass, if your listeners know that famous invasive plant. So, yeah, we were starting from less than scratch.
There's a moment, there's so many moments in this book as you describe the process of reclamation and restoration, or however the correct term is. But your wife and I think children maybe are watching this salmon that they've named Cassandra. And
everybody loves Cassandra.
Everybody loves Cassandra because it's so human in this moment. And there's two things that stand out to me I'm sure everybody's bringing it up with you, is this one sense where you say, well, how long is she going to keep this up? And you say, as long as it takes. That's the metaphor for the whole. And then this other thought that you can't separate what's happening in the stream with what's happening to the people who are sitting shoulder to shoulder and who are watching together. And so there's this connection, and it just, I don't know, it resonates. So when you talk about the work, there's also the people with whom you are doing the work that matter incredibly.
Exactly. My favorite quote from my wife's grandfather's writing, from Ole Leopold's writing, is he said, there are two things that interest me: the connection of people to each other and the connection of people to the land. And that little vignette you just retold about, that was a Thanksgiving weekend, actually, and we were out there. Sue's dad was still alive. He had planted trees with his dad and mom when he was 16, and those trees grew up. He actually built a house out of trees he planted as a teenager, and there he was along Tarboo Creek helping us with this restoration project when he was well into his 80s. So it was a wonderful little moment, and our whole family and some friends who were around, the salmon were running at that point, and we found this female that my wife nicknamed Cassandra. She was in mid-nest, so she was in the process of digging out the gravel so she could lay her eggs, and a couple males were hanging out trying to check out the action, and that's how we basically spent the day, was watching her, as you say, dig this nest until she was done.
Yeah. You say, and then you lay out your own sort of instructions or ethic or choices, a list of things near the end of the book. And one of the first things you say is surround yourself with people who organize their life in this way. Tell me a little bit about the four Beatitudes, as you call them in the book.
Well, when I was writing the book, I thought, well, I can tell people what we did and how we did it about restoring a salmon stream. But the real reason you would read this or pay attention to it is because of the why question. Like, why does it affect your life when you make this kind of connection and find such types of meaning in working with people that you care about and about a piece of land that you care about, and watch it sort of recover under your hand? It's a amazingly powerful experience. And so I call that a natural life, when you just sort of reorganize what's important to you. We're always bombarded with these messages that, well, you're really not a great person, you're really not cool, unless you have a great big house and a great big car and a great big TV. And And you know, that just, it's not working for us. I was just stunned when a friend who's a physician said, oh, I was just reading a paper, and it turns out 11% of adults in the U.S. are taking prescription medications for depression. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And then you think of people who are, you know, abusing drugs or street drugs or alcohol and think something is wrong with these values. And so that's what I call a natural life. If in the four beatitudes that you mentioned, I just was thinking through what I try to think about when I'm trying to stay sort of centered and live my life in a meaningful way. And so just to list them off, I say one of the things I try to work on is to be present. Mm-hmm. So that's just, you know, putting the phone down once in a while and not worrying about email for a few hours and looking at the moon or taking a walk with some friends and really talking to them and not being distracted. It's really important to be in contact with the people and the environment around you. So I call that being present. And then I also talk about the importance of being engaged. The living a natural life, to my mind, isn't about talking. It's a life of action. You have to do stuff. You have to get out and make things better and plant trees or bring prairie plants back to a neighborhood near you, something where you're doing something and making the world better in a tangible way. And then I think about being what I call being real. And to me, that's sort of a state of mind. It's mm-hmm. it's being comfortable with yourself and just loving yourself, if I could say that, and accepting yourself for who you are and your strengths and weaknesses and the work you're doing to make yourself a better human being. And that's just important, just to be, my father-in-law, Carl Leopold, used to call it being comfortable with yourself. I love that image. And finally, I talk about just being simple, of you know, not having to have the big TV and the gigantic house and to feel like you're doing a good job with your life, but just accepting that being simple can be beautiful.
Scott Freeman, the book is called Saving Taboo Creek, One Family's Quest to Heal the Land. It's a beautifully written book as well, and we'll put a link up to this full conversation and some information about the book on our website, listen.sdpb.org. Scott Freeman, thanks so much. Come back again.
Thank you, Laurie.